This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conkers3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my good friend at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter, otherwise known as Pete. Pete, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, not bad.
Good. Hello and welcome back, everyone. This is Twin Peaks Investing Podcast number 44. Pete and I have had an interesting week. Pete was asking me just before we started about my daughter. She's back at school and trying to encourage her to smile a bit more, you know, and get back into it a little bit. But, you know, it's early days. She's 3 days in to a fresh start almost and trying to just get back to learning about the teachers and her friends again and all the rest of it. So it's all a bit of a new life for her again outside of the home.
Well, I tell you, it must be such a relief.
Well, it is for her to be getting schooled, Pete. But I think there's also certain levels of anxiety out there regarding just schooling per se and the safety of it all. She went in on Monday. She had a test. They're all being tested regularly, and you know, she's already had one of her friends, you know, being isolated from school because they were tested positive. And she's got another, you know, she's going to be having a second test of the week tomorrow, the whole class as well. So it's quite an interesting thing, mate. So, yeah, that's what's going on there.
I guess a lot of our listeners are going through the same thing.
Absolutely. And that's why I wanted to raise the point, really. You know, we as parents have had one, two, three, or whatever number of children we've got, and also looking after other people's kids as well, invariably during lockdown. And suddenly the house is empty. It's a bit quieter. You know, I miss her and love her to bits. But I just want her to be, you know, in school safe and also learning and also socialising with her friends. Because when you're a teenager or a young boy or girl, part of your growing up is all about learning how to be around other peers, you know, other people that you're in school with. And that's how you learn about socialising and being around people.
Yeah, it's essential. Absolutely essential.
Right. I wanted to give a big shout out first, Pete, before we started talking about stocks and shares. To our listeners, because we've had some phenomenal listeners again to podcast 43. I want to thank everyone that listened all around the world, and it's especially the ones that are outside of the UK. We've had some interesting numbers from Ireland, Germany, United States, South Africa, Bahrain, Sweden, Russia, Malaysia, Spain, Singapore, etc. So I want to say, you know, big all you ladies and gents up that are in those places. And in and around the UK, we've had some really, really strong listens from people in Dublin. I'm sure that people in Dublin have been listening twice, you know, the numbers that we've had from there. Same again in Sheffield, loads of big numbers from there. Nottingham, Stoke, Maidstone, obviously London. And I'm not sure, I think I must have some people near me. It's definitely not me, but there are lots of listeners in Leicester as well. You know what I mean? It's not just me listening all the time. So thank you all for the listens. And big shout out for, I'm not sure I'm going to pronounce this right, so please accept my apologies, but Paderborn, it's Paderborn in Germany. Phenomenal number of listens. So thank you, whoever's out there in Germany listening to us. Please give us a shout out. You can find Pete at Wheelie Dealer and me at Conkers3 on Twitter. Just give us a shout out if you're listening from Paderborn in Germany. Thank you ever so much.
Wow. I had a strange one. I think I must have mentioned it to you before. I went out for a wheel, you know, around the locality, and must have been, I think it was like Saturday when it was a really nice day. Yeah, really sunny. And on the way back, I bumped into Ewan Hughes. It's actually, he's at Ewan Hughes on Twitter. He came along to the Wheelie Bash last year, so that was brilliant. And I bumped into him. I say bumped into him. We had to do the old elbow thing and keep him at distance. And there we are in the middle of like some street in Dedworth or something, talking about stocks and shares, which was really so. Hello, Ewan. Great to see you.
Brilliant. No, that's what it's about, Pete. I mean, this is the joy of being able to have that freedom to go out, and the weather's improving. We're talking last time about the
I needed it.
And then we've been blessed over the past week or so, depending on where you are in the world, obviously. We're in the UK. Pete's in Windsor. I'm in Leicestershire. So, you know, sorry, for people that haven't listened to before, you know, welcome. Pete's in Windsor, I'm in Leicestershire. We're not seeing each other. We're not in the same room. We're not seeing each other in video. This is just live, raw. Pete talking over me. I'm talking over Pete. This is just how we roll each time we do this podcast. And it's not edited. It's just what it is, guys and ladies.
It's just so family.
This is just how Pete and I are. But it's brilliant, Pete, that you're able to get out, go and do your shopping. The weather's improved, and we've had a bit of sunshine over the past 2 weeks or so since the last podcast. The weather's improved a little bit. The days are getting longer. It's not dark at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock anymore in the UK. So I think that's lifting people's spirits and moods as well.
I mean, as someone who doesn't see themselves as a trader, I'm not a short-term trader. I'm a long-term investor very much. But, you know, I do a lot of stuff around markets. Like every day I'm thinking about markets and doing stuff on markets, and even if I'm taking a few hours away from it or whatever, it's like, you know, it's always there, it's always in my thoughts about what's going on in markets and what my strategy is and what I'm doing and all this kind of stuff. And you know, there's no doubt that whether you're an investor or a trader, whatever, you've got to have your brain in a good place. It's like, and I felt, you know, last Saturday when I went out for a roll, that I was just a couch potato. You know, I've been a couch potato for as many months as I can remember, and it's not good for my head, you know, and especially because I've had ongoing health problems that have been niggling away at me. And it's like I just needed to get out, to clear my mind, do something completely different, to get some physical exercise before my heart packs up, you know. And brilliant. I mean, I think, you know, we must always keep this in mind, that if we're going to invest well, trade well, our heads have got to be in the right place. We've got to have enough sleep. We've got to be not drunk from the night before.
Are you talking about me there, Pete?
I'm not casting aspersions on anyone, but we've got to have our heads in the right place, or we will not make good decisions. Good decisions, I mean, it's hard enough to make a good decision when you're 100% on top form and your brain is absolutely perfect. Even then it's hard to do. So if you make it harder by taking drugs and not sleeping enough and having a rock and roll lifestyle, you know, it's not going to help your trading, it's not going to help your investing.
I agree with you about having clarity and all the rest of it. And we always bang on this podcast about psychology and being in mindset and being kind. I want to just turn this up a little bit. And one of my concerns of late, and I've had a few conversations with a few people, is goes back to being kind. You know, lots of people have been in situations where the markets have not been very good to them so far year to date. And a few, the markets have been very, very kind to them, and they're doing it exceptionally well. And year to date, they've hit all-time highs, or they've hit significant milestones regarding their portfolio. You know, we as other investors and traders should rejoice their success. We should, you know, commend them and say well done to him and to her, because it is hard investing and trading. It is difficult. You know, the market wants to make a fool out of every single one of us. So if someone's doing well
for a
period of time, congratulate them. Say, well done. You know, don't be envious. Don't be jealous, because your time will come when your portfolio is doing well and your stock, your favorite stock, is doing well, you know, and exceeding and racing to new highs and all the rest of it. So just be kind. You know, there's people contacting me saying, Pete, how do I deal with this and how do I deal with that? Because I'm being bullied here and this person is saying this about me and calling me a liar. It's just not necessary, people. be as kind as you possibly can, be as supportive as you possibly can to other people. And if you have doubts about someone saying about they've got this stock or that stock, go and check for yourself. Go and look at their tweets, go and look at whatever they're saying about the stock and what they were saying about the stock last week, the month before that. You know, don't go casting aspersions against somebody and calling them a liar when you haven't got any proof. If you, I have spoken about this before, right?
Oh,
if there's a takeover, lots of people come out the woodwork and say, I own that stock, right? All you have to do is just look back at what they've said about the stock previously. If they've never mentioned the stock before and they haven't got a contract note to prove that they've got it, then you can say, I've got doubts that that person has got it. You know, when the stock has a profit warning and it goes, the share price goes down 15, 20, 30%, no one ever comes out of the blue and says, I hold that stock. It never happens. You know, it's only when stuff are going well that someone jumps out of the blue and says they've got it. So I understand that, but please just chill, stop the bullying, be nice, be kind, be generous to each other.
I think it's a really good point. I think when it comes to Twitter accounts to follow, you will find there's a very, very, very small number that give you 100% transparency. I definitely do. I go completely out of my way to show every single trade I do pretty much as I do it live on Twitter, and I put it on my website on my trades page, and my portfolios page is updated as much as I can at the same time. So, you know, you get 100% transparency from me. You get all my winning trades, all my losing trades, and there's a lot of losers. But, you know, and then there's other people like Peter Conkers 3 who always shows his trades but may not show them the moment he buys them or whatever, yeah? But the question you've got to ask yourself on any Twitter account you're following is, can I trust this account? It's like with me and with Peter, you know who we are. Okay, I'm called Wheelie Dealer. He's called Conkers 3. We have pseudonyms. We have whatever, but we don't hide with anonymity. We are real people. You can meet us at conferences. You can come to the Wheelie Bash and meet me. You know, we are around. People know who we are. And if you've got accounts where you think to yourself, I'm not sure I trust this guy anymore, I'm not sure I trust this girl anymore, you know, if you've really got that, stop following it. Don't waste your time, because what is happening, either these people are lying to you because they've got some kind of psychological problem, or which obviously, you know, whatever, or they are exploiting you. What they are doing is telling you they've bought something, telling you how brilliant it is. The stock then starts doing well because everyone gets excited and buying it because whoever it is talking about this brilliant stock. But what they're doing is they are selling into the liquidity your buying is creating. And it is, they're doing it on illiquid stocks. So just, you know, all these AIM shares that jump up, they spike up. The reason it happens is because people are ramping them up and you are being exploited by these accounts. So if you've got any doubts, don't follow them.
I think you make a very, very good point there, Pete. I think, unfortunately, we've all been exploited in the past. You know, I've naively, when I first started Twitter, I was following a few accounts and I was like, ooh, this person knows exactly what they're talking about. They know this space, they know this, they know that. And, you know, back in the day, I probably wouldn't have researched some stocks as well as I should have done. And then, you know, we spoke about narrative fallacy last week, Pete, and you hear these wonderful stories and you think, okay, that stock must be quite good then. I've done a bit of research on it. X, Y, and Z is talking about it. So let me just have a nibble on it. Let me have a little punt on it. And you just get left on the spike, Pete. You know, it goes up 10, 15% and you're like, woohoo. And you don't know that you're in a stock that's being traded. And then you just get left on the spike for dead. You're left there hanging, you know, sort of greater fool theory. And, you know, Peter Conkers is the fool. Ha ha. You know what I mean? He's been left there hanging. So you can take very expensive lessons or you can learn from other people's mistakes. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and sometimes it's far cheaper to learn from Peter Conkers' mistake or Wheelie Dealer's mistakes. But you know, don't take everything on Twitter or any social media or any platform as read, because some people aren't telling you exactly what's going on. And that's why some people will never show you a contract note. You know, some people won't because of security reasons. Some people won't show you. And some people will come out of the blue and say they hold the stock, you know, when a month ago they didn't own the stock. And this week you know, and then you never see that they've sold the stock. So just be very, very careful about that.
I think there's a really important point there that, you know, for fairness, there are Twitter accounts. I know a lot of people who have got Twitter accounts who don't show all their contract notes. They don't show their individual trades, whatever. But I will say that they are trustworthy people. There are loads like that. So I'm not saying that everybody who doesn't give transparency is some kind of con artist. That is
absolutely not
true.
Absolutely not.
But all I'm saying is, if there are accounts where you've got your doubts and where this person is hiding behind anonymity, you know, you can't exactly go and meet these people, whatever, then, you know, if you feel not happy with it, just stop following it, because the chances are your hunch is probably right.
Agreed. Agreed, mate. Agreed.
There was something I read. I think it was Mary. Is it Mary McDougall? I think it's Mary McDougall or Mary McDonald. Can't quite remember.
McDougall,
Mary
McDougall from Investors Chronicle talking now, I think.
Yeah, in Investors Chronicle.
Yeah.
And there was an article, I think it was today I was reading it. It was from like a Investors Chronicle from months ago. I can't remember what the article was about, but the bit that stuck in my brain was that, you know, that eToro trading platform thing, yeah?
Okay.
Where you can follow really good traders and you can sort of copy them or whatever, and it sort of does it for you, yeah?
Copy trade,
you know, sounds like an amazing thing. I thought it was really interesting because they said that in 2019, which from memory wasn't an easy year, but it was probably a fairly normal year, I would have said, the average return from the top 50. So we're talking the top 50 traders, right? So that's a pretty select bunch, isn't it, really? Out of the top 50, the average return was 27%. Now, bear in mind, these people are supposed to be sort of elite, amazing traders, and they are short-term traders. I don't think 27% is particularly good. And if you think that's the average, there's going to be ones who got 50, 60, 70%. There must be a lot of them who only got 8, 9%. I was surprised by that. What do you think?
I think that's quite low, Pete. But this goes back to the phenomenon of trading, isn't it? It's what is the reality of trading? The reality of trading is that these platforms, and I'm not calling out eToro here or any other one of them, but a lot of the trading platforms, they're built on people losing. Because in order to trade, you have to be right for a very, very short space of time, whether that be a day, a week, a month, or 3 months. And sometimes the catalyst that you're looking for in that short space of time doesn't arrive. So you have to then close out that position, or you get margin called when there's a profit warning, or the good news that was meant to be coming out regarding the share doesn't actually happen. So you have to be very, very careful. You know, a lot of these, we talked about ramps, you know, and it's not just happening on AIM now, it's happening on FTSE stocks as well. Sometimes a preceded by placings or fundraisings and all the rest of it. Now, if the stock has gone up quite a lot and then somebody comes out with a placing, a lot of the time it's a discounted placing. And the reason why the marketing and the promotions were made for this particular stock was to increase the share price so they could get away with raising some money at a better price to reduce the dilution. So, you know, you're going to get diluted out of this position as well. So that's one of the dangers, really, of being caught in a stock that's been overly promoted.
Oh, totally, totally. It's funny, it sort of links to every podcast we do, you know, as we said at the beginning, it's sort of a bit like a pub chat, really, and we're sort of just rambling about various random things. And one of the things I had written down on my list of potential things to mention was, you know, the concept of a zero-sum game, where it's like, if you took the returns that everybody gets and adds them all up, they come to zero because loads of people are gaining, loads of people are losing, and it all balances out and the answer is zero, yeah? And I was thinking about this, and it's like, I think for short-term trading, it could well be a zero-sum game, or it gets to that. So it's like, you know, it's almost like in short-term trader, to be a winner, someone else on the other side has to lose. And I think that's probably the case with a lot of AIM junk stocks. You know, the winners are winning at the expense of the losers. But when you think about long-term investing, yeah, if you're buying a stock at, say, a pound, and you hold it for 10 years, and over those 10 years, the stock just gradually drifts up or whatever, and all that time, loads of people are buying as well. They're buying at £1.50, they're buying at £2, £2.50, whatever. It's like, it's not really a zero-sum game until you get a profit warning and the thing collapses at the end of it. But even then, it's probably not a zero-sum game. You know, it's like money is being created and you're getting dividends as well and stuff. So it's like, in a way, long-term investing is quite different to short-term trading in that aspect.
I agree with you in some respects, Pete, but I'd caveat it with the fact that regarding the zero-sum gain or game, it's usually the house that wins, especially in trading. So if you're looking at IG, for instance, they're making a bundle. CMC are making a bundle. Yeah, City Index are making a bundle. Yeah, the platforms, eToro's are making a bundle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, because absolutely.
The number of times that you are trading, or I are trading, yeah, is once every single day. Yeah, buying and selling every day, buying and selling every week. You know, they're not making as much money off the platforms that aren't making as much money are the ones that are having people that buy one stock a year and don't do anything.
Oh, God. I mean, the share dealing companies must hate me because I just never do any trades. I must do their nut.
So that's an interesting point that you make there, and I agree with you. Pete, I wanted to just touch on where we've been since, where the markets have been, because we've had a bit of volatility. We spoke in podcast 43 about growth and value, and we spoke about, you know, the risks in the market that we were seeing in 42 as well, and we raised again in 43, and then the market just went wallop last week regarding, you know, tech stocks. We talked about growth and value, and there might be a rotation, and then the heavens opened last week, and a lot of people were saying, whoa, what's going on here? You know, and it wasn't long after we recorded the podcast on the Wednesday, the 24th, I think it was. And the markets were then at, when we closed, they were at 6658 on the FTSE 100, Pete.
Yeah.
And on the Friday, when we released it, the markets actually fell to 6469. So a good 200 points almost there. And then we had a bit of a move, new month, you know, people that are putting money into the market each month helped the market up a little bit, and it went back up to 6692 around the third.
Yeah.
And the markets have been up and down and up and down since there. And they had a bit of a drop. SMT got sold off even more during that period of whilst we were away. And a lot of people were worried because it was down 20-odd, 25% from the highs in February. And then it had a bounce. And then last night, heavens opened in the US because the tech stocks got a massive rebound. And the Nasdaq was up, what, nearly 4%, Pete?
It had a big bounce.
$100 billion was added to Tesla's shares because it went up 19%, having fallen significantly in the past month or so. Nice. SMT rose in the latter part of yesterday. I'm not sure where it ended up today. But the markets are at 6725 as we speak. They've closed for the day. It's 6:30 in the UK at the minute. So the market's not moved that much in the past 2 weeks. But from where they are now to where they were 2 weeks ago. But they've moved a lot in the interim, up and down, up and down, up and down. And it's slightly higher at the moment. So a lot of volatility going on. I think a lot of uncertainty, Pete, as to where the markets could go next. But I think the conversation we're having about rotating from growth, heavily tech-related stocks to value, I think that will still continue. And that relates to what you wanted to talk about regarding inflation, Pete.
Yeah. Let's touch that in a second. I've just had a quick look at SMT, you know, Scottish Mortgage Trust.
Yep.
And that is heavily exposed to US tech. I'm in the same boat myself because I've got PCT, Polar Capital Technology, which is a tech fund. Yeah, it's interesting because what happened on that one was, and I'm just looking at, we're recording this on Wednesday, the 10th of March. We started recording at about 6 o'clock. Looking at the chart on that, it must have been Monday, there was a hammer reversal candle, which sort of, you know, lined up with what NASDAQ was doing, obviously. Big bounce yesterday, so it went big candle upwards. But interesting, today, we've just got, I don't know what the correct term is, but I sort of call it a doji star candle, which basically means that that turn up is already losing strength. And I pointed this out last night. Every night on Twitter, probably about 10:15 or something, I tend to throw out a load of tweets about what the index is doing technically, and that's all of them, you know, the CAC, the DAX, everything really. And I commented on there that it looked to me that the NASDAQ composite index would probably bounce, but then it might struggle fairly quickly. And that's going by what the Bollinger Bands and the midpoint line and stuff were saying to me. And I get a funny feeling that the move down in the NASDAQ, I might be wrong, you know, I'm often wrong on these, but I get the impression that the move down on the NASDAQ is not over yet. I don't think it is.
Well, it's going to remain volatile, Pete. I think the next kicker will be as and when, President Biden's stimulus checks come out or don't come out. You know, if he gives out 1.9 billion, you know, the ones that are sitting at home that can afford it will probably be adding it to the market. So that might help with the NASDAQ and tech stocks again and delay, you know, the ramifications of some stocks being completely overvalued, Pete. You know, it'd be very, very interesting. I mean, the interesting thing about SMT is, and looking at the chart, it had a low where everything got sold off, right, back in March. March 19th, £4.518, right? Fast forward, given all that happened with Tesla, because it's had a major shareholding in Tesla, and that went up, you know, 600, 700, I don't know, tenfold last year. It was a ridiculous sort of move. And then they sold a big chunk of Tesla. SMT hit £14.18 on the 16th of February. That's just 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then Wallop, it just fell out of the sky, essentially, just in the last 2 weeks or so. And it what did it hit, Pete? It went down to, let's just find it here.
I think it's 1,000 or something, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 10 quid.
It went down to
below that, about £9.50. Yeah, wow. Yeah,
from 14.18. £9.60.
If you bought it 14 quid, it very quickly dropped down to 9.60.
Lots of people buying into it. As with all these things, you know, I always say you've got to be mindful of where the stock has been. Have a look at where it was. Have a look at where it was last year before the markets tailed off and everything got spanked. And think about it before you jump in, because it was, you know, it's a fund, Pete. You know, it's gone up 100-odd% over the past 12 months. Yeah?
Well, I think there's an important thing to remember is that because it's an investment trust, it has a certain amount of market sentiment built into the price. Not like a unit trust, which more tracks the underlying stocks within the fund. With an investment trust, you get this extra thing where it's like it can trade at a discount to its net asset value, or it can trade at a premium to its net asset value, and it sort of swings around. So in a way, like the NASDAQ may have fallen, say, I don't know, maybe it fell 11%, but SMT may have fallen 17% for the same move, if you see what I mean. Because yes, you've got the decrease in value of the net assets, you know, the shares that are underlying the fund, but you've also got this extra bit where it gets discounted more because investors get worried and they want to get out. So that's like, if you like, the downside of an investment trust compared to a unit trust is that you probably get more volatility and it can be a bit more scary, but overall investment trusts are probably better.
Agreed. And this is what I would say regarding a lot of the funds that have done exceptionally well. You know, if you're in the fund and you're looking, you know, SMT or any other fund, and you're looking to hold it for the next 3, 5, 10, 15 years, then these sort of normal sort of periods of volatility, or when things are, go in and out of favor, it's just the way that it is. We just have to embrace it. You know, when you've had the share price go up 120, 130% in the past year, you know, if it drops 10, 15, 20, 25% in the space of a month, then it's just, you know, you've got to take it and accept it as a norm. Yeah, this is what happens when things get too far ahead. They come back sometimes, you know, and then you have to just wait and then carry on. And if you're invested for 3, 4, 5, 10 years, these things won't matter. You know, £14 right now will look cheap in 5, 10, 15 years if the tech revolution continues. You know, and SMT, you know, do what they've been doing for the past 15 years, you'll be fine. But if things roll over and implode and da-da-da-da-da, who knows? But this is just got to take it, you know, take the good and the bad and just take them equally.
Do you know, the thing is that I absolutely hate being a hindsight trader. So, you know, you can all virtually shoot me now or whatever you want to do, because what I'm gonna say now is absolutely disgraceful.
Don't say it then, mate.
I hate saying it, right? It's like the most, to me, it's the worst. Do you know, I absolutely hate when I'm on Twitter and that, and people go, oh, this stock has done this. And I'm thinking, what use to that? What use is that information to me? I want to know what it's going to do in the future. When you can tell me that, that will be useful. But when you're just telling me what it's done in the past, it's like, yeah, a little bit of information that has some value, but really not very much. Anyway, being a hindsight trader, with my hindsight trader head on, with SMT, right, if you were a new buyer into SMT and you were paying 14 quid, what you needed to be thinking at the time, with hindsight, you know, the overvaluation in tech has been there for all to see. If you didn't hear some brilliant market guru somewhere or whatever, and I'm talking about proper sensible ones, if you didn't hear them saying tech's looking overvalued, then I don't even know why you're in the market, because you're obviously not listening to anything. It was so clear that these things were massively, ridiculously valued. And in that vein, if you were urged to buy it, what you should be thinking is, don't put all your stake in at one time. Build your stake over time. So you could have put a little bit in at 14 quid when you were really excited about it and was completely the wrong time to be buying it. But then when it fell loads, you could be putting a little bit more of your stake into it. Because as Pete points out, over the next 10 years, it's going to be fine. You know, you're not going to have a problem. But, you know, you're just going to stress yourself out if you're putting all your money into SMT right at the top. It's just going to be a nightmare. So there I am, my hindsight trading there.
The thing is, Pete, and I love this quote, and this is from a Goldman Sachs trader, right, that once said, those who live by crystal balls will eat a lot of glass. No one can predict the future. We can look at tech, and I love my tech. I love AI. I've been researching a lot into genomics at the minute. And I'm looking at all the stuff that can help with, you know, diagnosing this and looking into DNA and all the rest of it. A big, big bit of research I'm doing at the moment. No one really knows what the future holds.
No.
You know, we were talking X amount of years ago, and I've looked at some research recently and some videos back in the day, and they were talking about the internet, and people didn't know what the internet was, and they were speculating what it would be and what difference it would make, and lots of people just said it was going to be a fad and this wouldn't last, and no, we're not going to be able to speak to people across the world, you know, simultaneously we're speaking with other people and blah, 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 blah. It's happening, folks. And some of the tech that's out there, as with all sort of industries, there's going to be companies that make hay and do really, really well. And there's some companies that are highly valued right now that simply will not, you know, do well. And the speculation in them will lead to people losing money. But there'll be some massive winners, as we've seen with the likes of Amazon and Tesla and Apple and Microsoft and others. You know, there's going to be companies like that. We just need to produce some of our own companies like that. We don't seem to have any at all.
Yeah, not in the UK. You know,
yeah. I'm not saying that Royal Dutch Shell, AstraZeneca, BP, you know, HSBC and others aren't great companies, but where are our great, massive tech companies that are dominating a sector? We don't have any.
No. Mate, yeah, on that thing of inflation, yeah?
Yep.
I find that a really fascinating topic because, well, for many reasons, but, you know, there's that shift, as you said, the shift from sort of growth companies into more what they call value. And, you know, that's sort of driven simply by the fact that if interest rates are going to go up, because everyone's sort of thinking that interest rates are going to go up because central banks are going to try to combat inflation. I'm sure we'll talk more about that. But so it's like, well, you know, people aren't going to want growth companies so much, they're going to want value. I mean, I can talk more about as to why that would be, and I probably will. But what's your thoughts on inflation then, mate?
Well, I think it's creeping up. I speak to people that are in various different trades. You know, some of them, unfortunately, are in the alcohol trade. I'm not going to talk about that too much, mate. I'm going to say publicans that own pubs, Pete, that haven't opened, you know, restaurateurs and then it's the construction trade as well. And it's creeping up, Pete. The cost of goods is creeping up. You know, I'm sure everybody that's been doing their online shopping or going to the shops to work, whichever, you know, outlets that they use, have noticed the price of even, I mention it each time on here, you know, the price of the beans, you know, of the various brands have gone up. You know, your washing powder has gone up. It's creeping up, Pete, and it was creeping up before we left, you know, the EU. And it's not the fault of Brexit; it's just the way that things are. The price of stuff is creeping up, you know, and that's unfortunately where we are. So, if you know, having done some research on this in the past, we end up with interest rates rising, which is, you know, obviously will be a knock, will really knock and dent tech stocks and highly priced PE stocks. Then people will revert to investing in value stocks actually make stuff. And if you go back and look at some research going back all the way down back to 1950s almost and up to the 20s now, the entities that do best in an inflation environment where the inflation is rising are companies with real assets, tangible assets. You know, we talked about intangibles. That's tech stuff, you know, data stuff that people can't put their hands on. You know, real companies that are making stuff do well. Commodities do well. So the mining stocks will do well. You know, the large cap mining stocks will do well that we know of. Real estate, you know, property prices will probably do well in inflationary environment. Gold, yeah. Obviously, sometimes that goes up in inflationary environment.
Yeah, gold's then, a funny one because a lot of people claim that gold is good in inflation, yet, you know, in the last 3-4 months, while all the time people have been talking about rising interest rates and possibly like rising inflation, gold's actually been going down and it's in a downtrend. And I suspect it's because it got overbought before. But I mean, my view on gold, I mean, I don't really like the stuff. Well, I like the stuff. I wouldn't mind having some, you know, but what I mean is, as an investment, I find that I think it's probably better in bad times than it is as an inflation hedge. It's like everybody says, oh, gold is brilliant in inflation. Yet you look at the facts, you look at what's actually happened over history. I don't think it is. I think it seems to do much better when times are bad.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure.
Have a look into it and you get...
One of our listeners will probably know the answer to this, but I'm not sure whether gold started to roll over in correlation to when the dollar started to roll over and the euro and the sterling was strengthening a little bit over the past month or so. I'm not sure if there's a correlation there. Well, no, it's interesting that you raise the issue of inflation because you remember the film The Big Short, Pete?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure lots of people that have listened to this podcast have seen that. If not, it's a brilliant film and you should watch it. But one of the protagonists of that film was a guy called Michael J. Burry, Burry.
Yeah.
And he was a hedge fund manager I forget the year now, 2005. And he basically started saying that the US housing market was overvalued and there was high risk subprime loans and they were extremely unstable and, you know, he was worried that the markets were going to collapse and so on and so forth. And everyone just said he was an absolute loon and an idiot and it's not going to happen. And, you know, all the banks was just saying he was an idiot. Anyway, he put out a huge bet against subprime exceeding, you know, over £1 billion.
He struggled for a long time. Because I've read
a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. For a long time, he was you know, a lot of people would say he was wrong. He even got to the state where a lot of his investors, because he ran a fund that loads of big investors have put, you know, trusted him with their money.
Scion Capital, yes.
Yeah, and he had to pay loads of them out because they were like, you're trading.
He's a loon because the bet just worked against him and worked against him and worked against him for over two years. And he was on the brink and they were all saying, bail. And eventually he was right. I mean, this is the thing. You can get your idea right, but your timing might be wrong. But he had to wait nearly 2.5 years, Pete, or maybe a bit longer, until the housing collapse actually arrived. And he was proven right, you know?
But the gains were so big.
Gains are massive, mate. I think if I recall rightly, Pete, he made... Oh, crikey, let me just get this figure right now. I think overall, they made over nearly 3 billion. And I think he individually... made, I don't know, half a billion or something daft like that.
Mental. Yeah, massive. Yeah.
Made a lot of money, mate. Made a lot of money. I might have those figures wrong, folks. You just need to watch the film, but I recommend that film. It just shows you what's going on regarding markets, and that sort of stuff could happen again. You know, it might be another entity, you know, another vehicle of choice that people are speculating on the market. But yeah, but Pete, house prices, buying vintage cars, artwork, you know, down at the bottom, you've got financial assets, large caps and small caps. So, you know, you've got to be careful with inflation environment that it might hinder stocks going forward.
I think I read somewhere, and I actually read this today, I think. I think I read that when you've got low inflation and it starts to pick up, then certain types of stocks do well. And from memory, I think real estate was one of them. But obviously, you've got to be careful with real estate, because obviously lots of them have got retail, you know, exposure and stuff at the moment, which is just absolutely toxic. And I think there was different sectors took over when you had higher inflation, but it was still expected to rise. So I think there's a sort of, but the one that seemed to do good all the way through was commodities. But the thing with commodities that we need to be careful of is it's that old saying, the best cure for high prices is high prices. Because what happens is, as the price of iron ore, the price of copper, the price of oil goes up, it encourages more operators to come into the market. And basically, because the returns are there, you know, when oil is at $100 a barrel, loads of really expensive development projects make sense. When oil is $20 a barrel, it's just not worth the effort. So the higher price just creates more supply. So at some point, it's like a self-correcting mechanism, but it does take time. There is a time lag, obviously.
Absolutely, and this is the point that we've made a few times. Really, is about preparing yourselves for the environment around us changing. And always being on guard, really, and doing your research and having a watch list is so important, you know.
Oh God!
I'm going to talk about a stock a bit later that I purchased a while back, and it's interesting because I'm looking at what was going on last week, and a couple of stocks came on sale, and I've nibbled at a few bits and pieces, new stocks that I was always liked and always thought were a bit too pricey. I've nibbled at some. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with it. And I think this is what I always say to people. If you've got a bit of cash, you can leave a bit of cash in your portfolio. Then when the markets have a little bit of a flux or they go down, you know, if you're a long-term investor and you've got some cash, then you don't really need to do a lot. You can just leave your portfolio alone. Or you can trim it. Or if you're prepared, you can get ahead of the herd and set and trim down some positions to buy them back cheaper. But if you've got some cash and you're not doing anything, sometimes some opportunities will just fall on your lap, and if you're able to hold them long enough, you might be rewarded for your, you know, your opportunistic approach. And that's the way that I like to go about it, Pete. I think sometimes we see things that we like and we think, yes, it's lower than it was, you know, a month ago, it's down 20% or 15% or whatever. But can it go lower? And by the time we've blinked, it's gone back up again.
It's gone back up. Yeah, I mean, I get caught in that all the time. I mean, it's funny because you mentioned watch lists just now, and I've actually got a topic on my list of how we use a watch list, but I don't want to talk about it in this podcast. Let's let's skip that off for another time. But so I wanted to say on inflation that my suspicion on inflation is that if you look in a bigger picture, longer term, yeah, I think the forces of deflation, of effectively prices getting lower, are really the problem. So I'm talking about, you know, stagnant economies and, you know, limping along and all the rest of it, sort of like we have done for the last 10 years or whatever since the financial crisis, yeah, where we've really had stagnant growth in Western markets. The exciting growth, the inflationary growth, has been in China and emerging markets and whatever, yeah. But that, I'm not saying there won't be inflation. What I think is going to happen, my hunch, is that we will get temporary inflation. And I think a lot of it, well, I think a factor for the UK is Brexit. I think that's going to cause some inflation, because there's obviously border problems and God knows what else, because that's been so screwed up. But I think the other thing is there's a massive supply imbalance. And what has caused that is the whole COVID thing is hitting supply within our country. So companies in our country that make things, they can't make as many as they were before, or they can't do it as efficiently as before because their costs have gone up, because they need to have PPE and all the COVID measures and whatever. So efficiency has gone down, so profit margins have gone down. But also you've got this supply problem that in the past we were importing loads of stuff, and loads of Western economies were doing this. They were making up for the fact that they make nothing at home these days. Like, we don't make, okay, you know, we make a lot of cars now, but not, say, compared to where we were 30 years ago, 40 years ago, we're making loads more cars, really, as a proportion of what we actually drove domestically. And what we were doing is we were importing the other cars from other countries. So that kept the supply to meet the demand. But I think we're going to have this problem now that all these other countries won't be making as many cars, and there'll be problems getting the darn things across the borders and whatever else. Partly because of COVID, partly because of Brexit, and it's got to drive up prices. And you've got, you know, the input cost of oil to make the you know, the energy to make the cars. You've got all the green stuff, which is adding costs right, left, and centre. You've got iron ore going up in price, copper going up in price, blah blah blah. It all adds cost.
I have to agree with you, Pete.
But that will work itself through.
It will work itself through. Whether it'll be short term or long term, I don't know. My short term view, my short synopsis of it is, you know, we are heavily indebted because of this COVID situation, Pete, and lots of other countries are too. And one of the ways that governments around the world have historically got rid of debt is to inflate it away. So we'll have to see which way this goes this time. Most of our debt hasn't been cleared for a long time. We reduce it, and then we increase it again. We were in a country that was in a state of austerity. COVID smashed that to pieces, and lots of money has been spent, and more is going to be spent. Lots of things are being extended to and beyond September, and we'll see what happens, you know, regarding COVID. And if we get out of here in September and everything goes back to some sort of relative normality, and we don't have another lockdown, heaven forbid, at the latter part of 2021, then, you know, we'll be back to normality, and people will be working again. People will be going on holidays again. People will be visiting families, using more oil, using more gas, electric, buying more clothes because they're going out socially more, and not just wearing a nice shirt and tracky bottoms on a Zoom call. You know what I mean? It's going to be very, very interesting going forward, Pete. And, you know, they're going to have a strategy in place to deal with the rising debt, and whether it triggers inflation and higher inflation for a concerted period of time, I really, really don't know, Pete. It's going to be one of those wait and see ones.
It's interesting because you said that, you know, austerity is not going to happen.
No. I said we were in a period of austerity. We were in austerity. before, and then this COVID thing has triggered it, where we've had to, the government has been forced to spend money.
Well, this is an interesting point. I see no evidence, when you look at the budget projections for the next 4 or 5 years that Rishi Sunak put out the other day, I see no evidence that the current Conservative government is actually going to go away from austerity. I think we are still going to have fiscal restraint, so government spending restraint. And that is what they are planning. I mean, this is why they're talking about a 1% pay rise for nurses, because the fact is, they got no money. And this idea that, you know, all this MMT, modern monetary theory, when you look in practice, governments are not doing it. You know, there's always this great theory, but it's not actually happening in what they are planning to do.
Pete, I'm going to have to disagree with you there, mate, because I think what's going to happen is that a lot of money is going to get spent on infrastructure, a lot of big projects, whether or not to carry on with HS2 or not. They're going to spend to try and get people back into work and get activity and businesses to thrive again. So they're going to spend the way out. They're going to spend the way out of this, Pete.
I'm just not seeing it there, you know.
Well, you're not seeing it yet, mate, but just watch this space. This is me doing my crystal ball gazing again.
Well, the budget projects in the next 4 years, and it's not in the next 4 years, so when's it going to be?
We will see, mate. Come on. Yeah. Let's move on to talking about some stocks, mate. Tell me about some stocks you've got your eyes on and what you've been seeing.
Here's one it's one of those that's a bit coincidental again. I was watching, I do this a lot when on podcast day, I was watching the BBC News or whatever it was, and they brought up a discussion or a thing about the government was bringing a new law to have, like, when a company makes something, so if you make a washing machine, you got to make it so that it lasts longer and so that it's more reliable and so that if it goes wrong, then you can buy spare parts, you know, to shove in it and keep the thing living for longer. So it's all about reducing landfill. You know, it's all about recycling. It's all this kind of good stuff. Yeah. And it's actually an EU driven kind of thing. Well, I say EU driven. It was something that the UK was involved in before we Brexited. And, you know, who knows who started it anyway. But the point is, EU's doing it, we're doing it. And, you know, so I think, so again, it's an interesting theme, and it makes me think, particularly this idea of spare parts and recycling and using stuff, makes me think of RST, Restore, yeah? Which just the other day bought another recycling company that I think they specialize in Apple products. So they get like Apple laptops, Apple phones, Apple iPads, and they take the old ones and refurbish them, make them work again or whatever, or, you know, make them work better, and then they sell them on. Yeah. And it's all this, an RST, Restore, who do it's sort of known for document management, document storage, that kind of stuff, and activities related to that, have really moved into this recycling space. And I think that's a really interesting place to be. I don't hold the stock. Historically, it's on a historic PE of about 19 or something. It doesn't pay much dividend, and it's got a fair bit of debt. But it's quite a stable business. You know, once people put their documents in for storage, they tend to stay there and they tend to keep paying. Yeah, what do you think of that, mate? Did you know that one?
I'm going to have to... people need to realise we do this live and we don't converse about which stocks we're going to talk about, right? Pete has a really horrible habit
of
creating stocks or talking about stocks, which I've got no intentions of declaring or talking about until I'm good and ready, right? Restore is a stock that I bought recently, Pete, right?
That's so funny.
It's a support services company, so it deals with all the big wigs up and around the country. It's a document management company, essentially, and they moved into other spaces. So they do physical and cloud storage. They shred, they scan, they do all the rest of it. And yes, they're into the recycling side of it. And I bought that recently after buying Renewi, that I mentioned a little while back. Renewees, obviously, in the e-waste side of things, they're in the paper waste, recycling, shredding, blah, blah, blah side of it. And I like it. It's one of Slater's, what used to be one of Slater's favourite stocks. He's had it for ages.
Is that Mark Slater?
Yeah. So it's one of those, I just thought it should just be a little plodder for me to just buy, hold and forget about. As I said to you before, I'm trying to go up the food chain and just buy some stocks I can buy and forget about, Pete. And Restore is one of them. Say again?
Was Renewi Shanks before SKS? Anyway. Mate, the other stock that's linked to all that is Biffa, B-I-F-F. I don't hold that either. But they've been talking a lot about the circular economy. So that's the idea that all products, you know, you buy a fridge or something, you have it, you keep it for 10 years or whatever, and then that fridge is sort of like goes back to a recycling plant and all the stuff's taken out of it, and it all gets used to build a new fridge or whatever, and it all comes around again, and it's a circular economy. I mean, it's brilliant. It's great stuff. It's what we blinking well should be doing, and it drives me nuts that we haven't been doing it.
Renewi and Shanks created the largest, well, a new international waste to product leadership back in 2017, okay. Pete, sorry. So that's that. Yeah, Restore is very, very interesting. Slow plodder. I want to talk about it being a slow plodder and being boring. We had a brilliant tweet, Pete, from Chumba. At Chumba 54339270. Hello, Chumba, and thank you for your feedback, and thank everyone else for their feedback. It's been phenomenal. You just put at Conkers. Just like to say that since listening to your podcast, my portfolio has increased. Full stop. Not due to share tips, but by you introducing some boring shares and talking about their prospects. So I've mainly moved away from some penny dreadfuls and their associated commentators. So that was a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant little retweet that we had from Chumba. So I would just say thank you for your retweet, your generous comments and all the rest of it. And I just sent back to him a Seth Klarnen quote, which says, while some might mistakenly consider value investing a mechanical tool for identifying bargains, it is actually a comprehensive investment philosophy that emphasizes the need to perform in-depth fundamental analysis, pursue long-term investment results, limit risk, and resist crowd psychology. Boring stocks never and rarely have lots of people chasing them, so you don't have to deal and mess with the crowd. Yeah?
So true.
Pete, he actually turned round, Chumba, and said, Pete, I've been listening to your podcast from the start, and I'm listening to number 5 from 6 minutes in, especially at 9 minutes. What you say there is spot on. Listen to some on Twitter, buy, and then get left on the spike. I did very well on boring old SMT. So he said, basically warning people to not get shredded by chasing people on the stocks. But Pete, one of the stocks I wanted to talk about that I wanted to disclose today, we mentioned that I don't disclose my stock straight away, and there's numerous reasons for that, which I've explained before in the podcast regarding people having to do their own research, me doing my own research, not trying to influence other people, lots of other reasons. But I always put my contract notes out on Twitter when I buy and sell, when I've once declared the stock. And this stock that I purchased goes back to July of last year. It's ITV. Which I'd held before, Pete. Yeah. Mm. And I got absolutely.
Piers Morgan.
Say again?
Piers Morgan.
We're not going to mention him here, Pete. Not going to mention him, mate.
Oh, my God.
Don't mention him.
Oh, stop it.
So, ITV, I bought last year at just over 58 pence, right? No one loved it. Nobody wanted it. Everything was getting sold off in the market. And it's one of those stocks that I just got absolutely battered by it last time. And we spoke about it, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago, Pete, or a year and a half ago. Yeah, but essentially, I bought it, at £2.41 on the 15th of the 3rd, 2016. This all my trades, people, and buyers and sellers are all on Twitter. That's part of my journal, right? So I bought at £2.41 on the 15th of the 3rd, trimmed it at £2 because I was thinking this isn't going so well in the August. Added more at £1.77 in the October of 2016. Its share price went up, trimmed it again in the April of 2017 at £2.10, and then it went down. Added more on the 14th of November in 2017 at £1.48, and then capitulated. I've been punched and knocked about by it so much I was like, I'm out of here. And I sold overall at a loss on the 14th of June 2019 at just under £1.08. So watch the market, add it on my watch list. 30th of July, I was like, right, they've paid an 8p dividend in 2019. It's now on offer at 58p, thereabouts, is what I bought it. I'm having it. If they come back and pay the dividend after COVID and lockdown, that's a massive yield for me, right? So bought it and waited for it to do its business. And it slowly but surely rose. The results came out, where are we now? Yesterday. They weren't spectacular. In fact, they were pretty poor. Profits had gone from 325 million, gone from 530 million to 325 million. And there was no dividend, right? Even though they were, you know, were coming out of lockdown. So straight away, the market sold off from the previous day of, I think it was 122-ish or something like that, went down 10% to 112.5. And I was like, don't like the look of this, but you know, let's just see what happens. And they're going to do their analyst talk, all the rest of it. And the shares rose the whole of yesterday afternoon, all the way back up to 127, and finished at 126, up 4%. So I trimmed some yesterday because there was no dividend at just over 125, and I've kept the rest. But I'll be showing and putting those notes on Twitter. Probably on Friday when this goes out, so everyone sees the disclosure and the transparency of what I do.
Do you know that what amazes me about that is that psychologically it must have been so difficult to get back into ITV after the way the swine had kicked you so much before. You must have been thinking to yourself, do I really want to buy this one, or are there all these other stocks that I'm quite interested in as well? That must have been a really difficult decision, really.
It's difficult, Pete, but I think part of what I've learned over 28 years of investing now is that sometimes you just have to pinch your nose and hold your nose sometimes and go, you know what, let's just do this, you know, because it's just one stock, Pete. And if you've got a larger portfolio, which you and I have, it's just one stock.
It's just
1%, 2%, 2.5% of your whole portfolio. Yes. And if it goes completely wrong, and you know, what's the likelihood of ITV going to zero? I would say that's smaller chance than, you know, one of the speculative stocks that I've picked out before that have done extremely well.
Well, it's got,
you
know, more chance getting taken
it's got
over.
More chance, yeah. It's got chance of being taken over. It's got chance of paying me a dividend. And if they come back and said, oh, we're only paying a 4% dividend, right? That stock would have rose from 126 to 130, 135. Because people want dividend. They're getting nothing in the bank right now. Yeah? So they want some dividend. So I was hoping, you know, 58p, 4p dividend, happy days. No dividend. The share price is already at 125. Let me take some off the table now and wait. And if they come out in the next 6 months and say, things have improved, our advertising revenue's gone up, let's pay a dividend. I'm happy with that. They're trying to do the streaming. They're trying to do other bits and pieces. They're trying to get BritBox and the ITV Hub, revenue driven. They've did that big thing, getting the Harry and Meghan thing, which we're not going to talk about. They got that, so that some revenues are going to come in from that. But they're trying their best. They just left it too late to fight against Netflix. So it's just one of them things, Pete. You know, who knows what the future holds for them? But I've taken some off the table. It's done all right. I was up over 100% on my initial entry. We'll wait to see what happens after that.
It's a great trade. Let's be frank about it. It's a really good trade. No doubt about it. Hey, I know I keep harping on about flipping recycling. I'll just throw this in quickly, right? Because I want you to give me a view as to whether you think it's true or not, right? Although I do think I've heard it before. I heard today somewhere, don't ask me where, that 75% of all the Rolls-Royce cars ever made are still on the road. Do you think that's true?
I think that's potentially true, Pete. And the reason why I'm saying that is because a bit like some of the... You used to always talk about the Volvos. Remember the Volvos, Pete? Built to last, indestructible.
Yeah.
Now, you know, if you've got a Rolls Royce and you looked after it, which you should have done if you've got a Rolls Royce, right?
Yeah.
They're going to last, Pete. The problem with some of the cars that we've got now is that they're not built to last, Pete. It's like everything else. They're built to fall apart or rust or whatever. So
built
you buy a new
obsolescence.
One.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's exactly, yeah, it was probably in that BBC News thing then when they were talking about recycling. Yeah, it was just this idea that things to be made better are made so that you can replace parts to keep them going and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you want me to bang another stock in quick?
Of course, mate. Go for it.
Well, I'll mention, I don't hold it. I don't know anything about it, yeah, but it's a new one that's just appeared, and it's a company called Tiny Build, TBLD is the Epic code, the TIDM code. And what's interesting about it is it's a video game stock. And, you know, we've had Codemasters, CDM taken over. I hold myself Team 17, TM17. I've got no intention of selling it. And there's Sumo. S-U-M-O, which is quite an interesting looking one. Obviously, Keyword Studios, KWS. So, you know, it's an interesting sector. And now we've got Tiny Build as well. I mean, I know nothing about it, so I'm just throwing it out there. If people want to have a look at it, have a look at it. If you don't want to have a look at it, don't have a look at it.
Okay. Have they got any big name things that they've actually done, Pete, yet?
Mate, I know nothing about it at all. I literally know nothing about it at all. But I just saw it there. It was, I think it listed yesterday. And I thought, blimey, that's the first thing we've had in that sector for quite a while, you know what I mean? And it's been such a great sector. So, it could be worth a look.
Okie dokie. Right, let me throw one out there, Pete. This is a NASDAQ-listed ticker symbol BNGO. And people automatically think, oh, is that a $BNGO, so it's not Bango, which I know you already hold, Pete.
Yeah, I've got Bango, yeah.
I don't hold this stock. It's called Biano Genomics. B-I-O-N-A-N-O Genomics. Bio Nano Genomics. Yeah?
Yeah.
And it's a San Diego-based instrument company that offers genome analyst equipment. So an equipment, Pete. And it runs and looks at all the different analytics and genomics for individuals. Very highly valued at the moment, very highly priced at the moment, very little revenue at the moment, but it's another one of those genomic stocks in the US that people are, I don't want to say the word speculating on, but when the revenues come in on this stock, it may well do very, very, very well. The thing about these stocks and these smaller sort of tech related, health tech, med tech sort of stocks in the US is that once they appear on the radar, they invariably get very, very, very highly priced. And at the moment, I think it's valued at over $2 billion, forward sales of over 100, 130 times. It's not one to go and speculate on. It's just one I'm just making you aware of to go research, have a look, and then have a look at the other stocks that are around it. So that's Bio Nano Genomics, folks.
Is that $3.4 billion?
Around that, the value might have gone up since I last looked at it, Pete. Yeah,
I'm looking on ADVFN on the app, and it's got market cap $3,419,624,570. So I think that's $3.4 billion. I think.
Yeah, probably.
Mate, that's intriguing. I've never heard of it.
You won't have heard of it, mate. I'm looking on a different website. It says the market cap's 2.45. It's already gone up silly amounts over the past year. Over the last year, Pete, up 1,387%. Year to date, up 178% already.
Wow.
Last 3 months, up 1,589%. So, yeah, that's why it came onto my radar, because I'm looking at what's flying in the US.
What's not.
Yeah.
Wow. We need to talk about some things. So,
A bit of housekeeping, really. Just to say thank you, ladies and gents, ever so much. I want to thank everybody that so far donated to the Twin Peaks challenge. We're sitting at the moment, I think, on £960 that we've raised so far. And some people have made some large donations. I want to thank you all for that. And I'm just shouting out again so that anybody that wants to donate £1, $1, whatever the amount is, to get us nudged over 1,000 would be fantastic before everyone starts lumping all their money back in their ISAs and their other stuff in April. That'd be brilliant. You can find us on the Just Giving page, which is on Pete's website. And you can find it on the articles which I put out on the Twin Peaks articles that I put out for the podcast as well. So that's where we are with that. And I just want to say as well, you know, thank you all for the feedback that you guys are giving us, because I think what's really, really good is that we've learned a lot from you guys giving us the feedback. We try to improve it, the sound quality, putting it onto various very platforms, which you guys have asked us to do, ladies and gents have asked us to do. And invariably, we're reaching people in far-flung countries. So that's absolutely phenomenal. And we want to thank you all for subscribing on the various platforms that you've given us. Pete and I are near, I think, a significant milestone regarding the numbers of people that are actually listening to it. We've hit this milestone, there's two milestones we're going to hit. We're not going to say what they are yet, but I think you guys will be surprised, and we want to thank you for helping us head towards this milestone. And we'll be there, I think, in the next couple of months, and we'll share that with you. So for the charity, it's still the Memphis Charity for Disabled Children. It's at justgiving.com/fundraising Twin Pete's Challenge, and you'll find that page there. You can make a donation. Pete, what did you want to add?
Yeah, well, on that charity one, just quickly, if you go to my website, basically go to www.wheeliedealer2.weebly.com and go to the Twin Peaks podcast page. At the top of that page, it's got the link to that Just Giving page, so you can find it dead easy. Other thing I wanted to mention just quickly is that we're sponsored by SharePad and ShareScope. If you fancy using SharePad yourself, ShareScope yourself, all over my website, and I'm pretty sure on Peter's, which is Peter at what is it, www.conquersfree.com, is that right?
Well, mate, yeah.
Yeah. There's I hate the word adverts. There's images all over the websites where basically if you click through, you can get 1 month of free data from any of those platforms for SharePad and for ShareScope if you want to go ahead and do it. If you want to know anything about ShearPad or ShareScope, send me a DM on Twitter, or you can email me on wheeliedealer@btinternet.com. Ask me a question. You know, I can often help. And I've got contacts at ShearPad and that who are really good at giving me information to pass on to you if you want to know anything about it. So, yeah, just shout.
Okey-dokey. Pete, I wanted to mention one other stock, if I may.
Oh, go on.
Yeah, it's not a stock that I own, folks. It's a medical products company called Convatec, yeah, Convatec, and ticker symbol CETC, and it came out with results, pretty good results actually, last Friday, and it's seen demand really from elective procedures, and depression. Well, it saw a loss of elective procedures that were delayed by COVID, but it expects to deliver revenue growth, and it's actually done quite well. So I just want to briefly just bring that up on the radar of other people, because the chairman was saying, I'm confident in the inherent attractiveness of the markets we serve and in Convatec's growth prospects. So, you know, full year revenues to December were up 4% to 1.89 billion in constant revenues. And yeah, it just seems to be one of those sort of stocks that's shown the resiliency of its services. So I just wanted to bring that to people's attention. I would say it's another relatively boring stock, but it might be one that just weathers a storm. So I just wanted to bring that. Say again, Pete.
I've been interested in Convatec, which is CTEC, for a long time because it listed on the market. And because of my health situation, I understand the products they do because, you know, I use a lot of the kind of things they sell. So I was always interested in it, and it had a very poor start after IPO and it sort of suffered. But it really looks to me like it's getting back on track with things. And obviously COVID hasn't helped it because you know, non-COVID stuff, you can forget it, mate. If you've got a problem that's not COVID, they're not going to even go near you. But the interesting thing on that as well, if you look at the chart, it's sort of in a range below, I would say, what, 175 to about, I don't know, up to 210, something like that. 175 to 210 in a sideways range. And it's sort of near the bottom end of that range now at 192. So, you know, there's worse times to buy it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm looking back before the drop in, so February time, Pete, 215, yeah?
Yeah.
Dropped all the way down to 142 in early March.
Yeah.
And it's just like you say, it's I think it's only once peeped its head above where it was in the February, or there or thereabouts in the February, almost like a double top in May of 2020. And since then, it's just like you say, it's been trapped between 170 and just over £2, 208, and it's sitting at 192 now. So I just think it's one of them which I prefer to buy stocks that no one's talking about, Pete. I prefer stocks that are not being ramped. Yeah. I prefer boring stocks that can go and do the business, not fully traded, jumping in and out for 5% and 10%. And it just steadily goes along. And if that one, you know, raises its head with further good news further out, I may have a buy of it myself, but I'm telling people about it now so they can do their own research about
it. I think that's a great long term. So I think it's the sort of stock you could buy, and if you held it in the next 10 years, you probably would have done pretty well on it. And you get over 2% dividend you're picking up, and that hopefully will improve. And the products they make are very much repeat purchases. The people who use them they're having repeat purchases every couple of weeks. This stuff is, you know, it's that kind of product.
Okay. Pete, I'm going to quickly give two shout-outs, really, for two people that I admire a lot. One of them is really off the radar, doesn't want a name being shouted out, but I'm going to give her a shout-out anyway. and that's that lady's name is Nemo and the Sharks, and you can find Nemo and the Sharks at
Nemo
Sunneti One. That's at Sunneti One. Phenomenal investor, doesn't mind running in front of buzzes and picking up what loose change is out there, and buys some phenomenal stocks. And at one stage, I think one particular stock that she holds, GGP, was at its height, she was up 30-fold, I think. Awesome investor. And another one I'd like to give a shout out to is a young man by the name of Henry Viola. And his handle is HT Viola, at HTVIOLA. And he writes a blog called The Ethical Entrepreneur. Really, really smart, clever, short, snappy. Look at the markets. Have a think about what you're doing, all the rest of it. And Henry, I think he's trying to organise and help organise, Pete, for me and you to have a soiree where we do a Twin Peaks and talk to people. And that's why I'm talking about him today, because he's like, yeah, we could even help Wheelie Dealer and Conkers organize it. He was having a chat with this person. I'm like, whoa, what are you doing?
That's good.
Everyone's just in a rush to just get out and about when the sun's out and lockdown's finished. And they're like, let's have a live Twin Peaks where we can all sit there and have a beer together. It's a cracking idea. It's something that Pete and I have spoken about. We'll see what we can do about that, whether it be this year or next year or whenever it's safe.
Brilliant. Yeah, no, that sounds great. Well, hello to Nemo and hello to Henry. Brilliant.
Right. We're going to close here, folks. We've already done 1 hour and 15 minutes. I want to say thank you ever so much again. And as I always do on these podcasts, you know what? We're here. We're in lockdown. We've had some fantastic weather. I said in the last podcast, you know, the sun is shining. There's a little, you know, sparkle of light at the end of the tunnel. We're doing all right. We've got this far. Just keep going, people. You know, keep yourself safe, and let's just look forward to the summer. You know,
get your vaccine.
Get your vaccine if you get the chance. You know, and you know that's, you know, obviously, you know, it's your call if you make the decision. But do what you can for the people in and around you. You know, we talked about bullying at the beginning of this podcast. You know, do what you can to be kind. Do what you can to look out for somebody else. Do what you can to say something nice. Do what you can to give, just bring a smile to someone else's face. There's enough negativity out there, you know, so do what you can to just help other people. And in turn, there'll be a time when you're not feeling great. Someone's going to do it for you. Pay it forward and it'll come back. The more that you give, the more that you receive. Okay, folks,
definitely.
That's me signing out. Love you all to bits. Wherever you are in the world, stay safe, be healthy, and pay it forward. Pete?
Cheers. Yeah, thanks, people. See you. Speak to you soon.
All right, ladies and gents, we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Take care, God bless, and we hope you enjoy this podcast. Whatever platforms you're using, please subscribe and retweet and share if you can, and share it with other people. God bless. Over and out.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.